General Motors on Safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. Bringing you the African bushveld of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on Safari.
It was Alan Moorhead who remarked some years ago that nearly 9/10 of Africa's wildlife had been decimated over the last 100 years, and in some parts of Africa, poachers continue the slaughter. But it is generally true to say that in those areas which have been given over to the preservation of game, populations have tended to increase, particularly the gregarious species, such as warthog, baboon, and impala. In fact, in certain cases, a curious situation has arisen where a certain species has tended to develop at the expense of others. In the Kruger National Park, for instance, the impala population is well over 200,000, whereas the combined total of wildebeest and zebra is hardly more than 20,000. There is no danger here, as long as the habitat can support them. But what if it can't? Take Tsavo National Park in Kenya. Elephant damage over the last years has denuded the environment to a state of devastation. The rhino, whose browsing territory has been reduced to a minimum, are walking skeletons. In Zambia's Luangwa Valley Game Reserve, the same problem exists, though to a very much lesser degree. In the Southern Game Reserve, an area of 3,200 square miles, the elephant population has reached alarming proportions. Gordon Pettick spent 5 days there and saw at least 30 groups of elephants. But he also found that the problem is being coped with most effectively by Zambia's game department. Well, here is the story he recorded. I would like to call it The New Economy. Near the pontoon bridge, which crosses the Luangwa River into the game reserve, there stands an abattoir. But this is no ordinary abattoir. It has been built with care to provide Zambia with a new economy. Giant generators power the huge refrigeration plant, which has been designed to house the carcasses of elephant, hippo, and buffalo. On the day that Gordon arrived in the Luangwa, an elephant which had been shot in the reserve itself was tractored up to the entrance of the slaughter shed.
As I stand here talking to you, this giant 3.5-tonner, aged about 30 or 35, is slowly being hauled by block and tackle from the trailer onto the porch and from the porch into the entrance of this vast slaughter shed. 3.5 tons dead weight, and it's slowly hauled inch by inch back along this long cement floor to a central point where it will be actually hoisted by the legs onto a block and tackle.
Jack Boita is the man in charge here, and he discussed some aspects of the new economy and the dead elephant that lay in front of him.
Well, now, Jack, the elephant's arrived, over 3.5 tons of it. What's the next stage?
We start now by skinning the beast by cutting along the spine, cut through the skin along the spine. You notice those chaps with the hoops there, they're pulling the skin away to allow the skinners to get in.
What is the thickness of the skin?
Along the backbone there, I'd say it's all of 3/4 inch. As it tapers down towards the belly, well, up to about 3/8 inch.
Uh-huh. Now, this chap here nearest to me is cutting off the ear, is that right?
That is correct. We do that to get that out of the way. If you look just behind the eye there, you find a large depression. That is known as the temporal muscle. And attached to that also, you have the tear gland. Most people consider the temporal muscle as one of the finest pieces of meat on the elephant.
I see, and there seems to be quite a lot of meat around the cheek here as well.
Yes, the cheek muscles are pretty fine-grained too, and very tasty.
Uh-huh.
I always like comparing that to a sheep's head. Mm. The finest meat came from the jaw.
Now, would you say that this pair of tusks was the average size tusk of the elephant found in this part of the world?
Of the elephants that we're cropping, I'd say yes. Mm. We don't go for the heavy tuskers. At the present stage, we feel that from the cropping point of view, to decrease the numbers of the elephant in the reserve, it would be better to go for the middle-aged females.
I see. Incredible how that one tusk is definitely shorter than the other. Is this a common characteristic amongst them?
Oh, yes. Most African elephants, you'll find that the one tusk invariably is shorter than the other. That is the one that is used for rooting and for barking. You can imagine with the body weight behind it, when it starts tearing strips of bark off a large tree, there is a considerable amount of wear and tear on that individual tusk.
And the trunk. Is the trunk used for any purpose?
Yes, yes. The trunk is considered by most Africans as a delicacy, and I personally like it when it's been stewed in a pressure cooker.
How much poundage do you think you'll be able to rescue from this particular beast?
Large lumps, I should say, up to about 1,500 pounds. That's going on to 3/4 of a ton of saleable meat.
Now, Jack, all this amount of work and the organization that you put into this abattoir, if I can call it that, presupposes that you do have a market for meat.
Oh, yes, very definitely. Before we embarked on the scheme, we had government economists and private economists investigating the market potential, and it is a firmly established fact that throughout Zambia, elephant, hippo, and buffalo meat will be sold quite readily.
Could you possibly work out a price list of what this elephant is worth on the market? You know, not in terms of meat, in terms of everything that it has to offer.
Well, just speaking roughly, meat, I would say we would have the better part of, say, up to 80 pounds. We would have skin, belly skin, 10 to 12 pounds. The ear skins would be worth, well, let's say, 15 pounds. The forefeet, which are in ready demand with the overseas tourists, say a fiver for the pair. Tusks, let's say an average of 15 pounds. That would gross us, for a beast of this size, something like 125 pounds.
That's a reasonable amount of money, I must admit.
Oh, yes.
Well, Jack, there's so much more to talk about, but I think you've certainly given us the general picture, and I think it's terribly encouraging to realize that this elephant, which has been so necessarily shot to save so many more elephants, is anyway at least fulfilling an economic purpose and is of tremendous use.
So there was an elephant that had, by necessity, been shot. But why? In the cold light of the abattoir, the slaughter seemed cruel. The answer was provided by the game warden, Johnny Oes.
We have two big game reserves on the west side of the Luangwa, the north game reserve and the south game reserve. I estimated the elephant population in the south game reserve at between 13 and 15,000. This has subsequently been verified by a survey just carried out, and we are confident we have a minimum of 13,000 elephants in this valley.
Now, 13,000, you would say, is far too much for the square mileage of this area.
With our control operations, that is, shooting crop raiders, elephant crop raiders, we've had this unnatural concentration of elephant, which is, as I think you've seen, the devastation to the trees has spread over the entire game reserve, and I think we can beat it, but we'd have to move very fast.
13,000 elephants in a 3,200-square-mile game reserve. Over 4 elephants per square mile. An incredible concentration. To protect the environment for other species of animals, it was obvious they had to be cropped. But how were they cropped? This time, Gordon talked to Rolf Röhr, a game ranger specially trained in this type of work.
Now, this drug that you're using, I understand, has certain advantages over other types of drugs in use. I'd like to know a little bit more about that.
Well, the drug itself is called succinylcholine chloride. It is, by its nature, the only drug that we can use for our cropping scheme, in that it breaks down into two harmless chemicals in a very short time after injection.
This is not a muscle relaxant, is it?
The drug we're using is in fact a muscle relaxant. It goes directly to the synapse between the nerve fibrils and depolarizes the synapse so that there's no electrical transmission, no nerve impulse, with a result in relaxation and loss of control of the muscles.
Can you use this drug on human beings?
It is used in the hospitals as an aid during surgery for muscle relaxation.
Now, if you fire the drug into an elephant, presumably then it would take some time for the drug to go to work.
We've been getting an average downtime of 2 minutes with this massive overdose that we're using. The downtime is of course very dependent on the actual injection site. If you hit an animal in the lower abdomen or some of the other areas where there isn't particularly good circulation, it naturally takes a bit longer for the drug to take effect.
Now we come to the drug gun. In fact, it looks as if it was welded out of two different types of guns.
It is, in fact, made of two separate guns. One is a 20-gauge shotgun barrel, which has been rifled, and the other is a standard 2-2 rifle with the barrel plugged and a small gas inlet drilled into the top of the barrel. There's a corresponding inlet on the bottom of the 20-gauge shotgun barrel. Now, on firing, the gases from the blank 2-2 cartridge that is used in the 2-2 pass up through the inlet and propel the syringe out the 20-gauge shotgun barrel.
How far can you shoot the syringe?
Well, it's quite surprising. Considering the weight of a fully loaded syringe, we can get a reasonably accurate group at 60 yards with this equipment. But it's better if we can sit back at 40 and shoot from 40. We like to shoot, have the animal go down, have the others move off, without them ever really knowing that a human being was the source of the disturbance, what little disturbance there is.
What is the reaction of the other elephants in the herd? Is there any herd reaction to the shot itself?
We get a very mixed reaction. If the animals are aware of human presence, they often whirl about trying to actually locate the source of the noise. The injected animal usually stays with the herd for about a minute and then begins to wander off by itself. Now, here reaction varies. The injected animal often sort of drops behind as the other animals move off. Very often they stay with him, and when they do stay with him is when we have the problem. We don't like to fire a conventional firearm at all, but we have to get in and bleed the animal. From the health point of view, it is essential that when you sell meat, that the meat has been properly bled. It may seem that we could sort of stand by and wait for the animals to push off, but we've got a period of about 11 minutes during which we can get in and bleed the animal after he's actually down. And if we don't get in that time, then we lose the carcass for all practical purposes, because we have a resident vet, a meat inspector, on site at the actual factory. And he is just as likely as not to condemn the carcass. And each condemned carcass is a waste of good time and money.
Do you see this drug and this gun coming into general use throughout Africa?
Yes, I feel that the drug gun has tremendous potential in this type of work. It is by far the most satisfactory method that we have come up with, and we've done considerable experimentation with conventional firearms and with various hunting techniques. It's by far the safest and most humane way of destroying large ungulates in great numbers.
The next morning, Gordon was to see the drug gun in action. Norman Carr, ex-warden of the reserve, Johnny Oss, Rolf Röhr, Clem Hardner and Gordon Pethick went in search of elephant. They found them half an hour later. Immediately, Johnny and Rolf went into action.
We'll get down there. They're in the bottom of the river there. And we'll go down and move them out of the riverbank. And as soon as they get up on the bank, I'll shoot one.
How many are there? Four, aren't there?
There are four bulls. They're all fairly small. There are no big ones in back. The one in back we'll leave alone, but any of the first three we can take.
Yeah. Average, what, about 2.5 tons each?
Oh, no, they'll go a little bit higher than that. They'll be all around three. Yeah. That third one possibly won't go much over three.
Now, they're actually in the river bank, riverbed, rather. We're on the bank a few feet high, so how are we going to get round? Are we going to circle?
We'll walk down in the riverbank just here. The wind is filling crossways. We've got good wind. We'll walk down to the river here and then approach the elephant, push them up over the bank. When the one steps over the bank, I'll put one in his
rib cage or behind.
Behind, fence. I imagine,
yeah. Well, they seem to be completely undisturbed at the moment.
Well, they have no idea we're here now. This is the beauty of the exercise. We can move in here, shoot an elephant, and move out. And some other elephant just over there, about a quarter of a mile, will never know we were here.
So the next stage is to mix your solution, is it?
The solution, yes. We have to put 16 cc's of water into this powder solution and shake it for a few minutes. Until it's all in solution, until all of the powder is dissolved, and then just load it straight into the syringe.
16 cc's of water, and how much of the actual powder itself?
8 grams of the drug itself.
8 grams being a pretty heavy loading, isn't it, Ray?
Yes, it's a massive overdose. Experiments done in various other game reserves in Africa have shown that 3.5 grams is enough to kill an elephant of about 5 tons over a period of 20 minutes. Well, I use this massive overdose in case of a poor injection site, i.e. the stomach or any of the intestinal cavity,
and absorption is very slow. With a higher concentration, you get a much quicker downtime. And we're naturally interested in keeping the elephants as near to the actual shot location as possible. Time is very important in this sort of thing.
Well, as time is important, I'll leave you to get on with it, Rolf. As I talk, Rolf has already got the syringe ready, loaded actually into the 12-bore breech, which is part of this rather strange-looking weapon. Takes his gloves off, and I take it we're now ready to set out.
Yes, we're ready to go. We'll move down slowly into the riverbank.
Here we go then. Rolf is in the lead with the syringe gun, closely followed by the game warden, Johnny Ace. We are actually circling to the left of the elephant, keeping the wind in our favor. This is tremendously important. If they get our wind, then of course they'll be away like a shot. They're actually over to our right and below us. The bank river falls away quite sharply. The meandering bends have cut great shelves into the bank itself, and we can look down from about 20 feet or 30 feet onto the elephant below us. A greater honey guide swoops by. Now, with only 30 or 40 yards dividing us from the elephant, the river is completely free. Every other animal in the bush, every other bird having detected our presence, excepting for the elephant. They haven't heard us, they haven't seen us, and they haven't smelt us. Still standing there, completely oblivious of our presence, four bulls, the big bull in the rear, the other three directly in front of him, and the party now comes to a halt. The whole party observing the movement of the elephant through binoculars.
We don't notice the wind has changed, though. We've got to stand and wait here now until the wind changes another direction. We can't follow our original line of approach. That's why we all stop now.
Yes. One elephant has already climbed the bank, moving slowly across us.
I think we have taken him just now, Donnie.
Yeah. Pauses in his step. Still no sign that he's detected our presence. We're moving forward, are we, Johnny?
Roger. I think we'll take it before these others come up.
The plan, then, is to take the bull in the front, who's a good 25 yards ahead of the other three. 25 yards ahead of the three bulls that are still in the riverbed itself. And the plan is to take him before the other three come out. Absolute silence. Everybody comes to a halt. Wolf standing there about 10 yards ahead of us. The syringe gun is now leveled at his shoulder. He's taking aim. He's fired. Syringe entered into the stomach just below the rib cage. He scuffed sideways and then came to an absolute standing halt. The other three in the riverbed have turned round towards the sound, completely bewildered. The syringe gun goes off with just a mild plop. And the syringe itself went straight and true, right into the stomach, just below the rib cage of the elephant. And now it's moved off slightly, perhaps 5 or 6 yards. And now it's a question of whether or not it will be able to survive a bit longer. Rolf, how long will that drug take to react?
It should be going down just fairly soon. It was a low hit. The cartridge wasn't as good as the last one. It's lower down, almost in the intestinal cavity. And it'll take a little bit longer for the drug to absorb. Yeah. This is the reason that I use such a tremendous concentration. Now, this one is hit too low. It should have been higher up and about 6 inches forward. It was quite a long shot. I think he'll be going down just now. He's beginning to walk. You see the stiff gait.
Yeah, he's fighting,
fighting the drug. But you see, there's been no undue disturbance. These other two elephants are standing. They've gone back to feeding on the other side.
And his partner here is walking between the elephant, the actual one that we shot, and ourselves.
Completely oblivious of what's happened. This is the beauty about it. Of course, a rifle shot at any elephant in a mile away would be off like a...
Not only 1 mile, but several miles. Mm-hmm. A rifle shot in the bush like this has a tremendous effect on not only the elephant, but all of the animals.
He's beginning to move at a rate of knots now, isn't he? Now he really is feeding the drug.
He'll go down now.
And of course, his metabolism increases with the rate of movement, and the faster he reacts to it, the quicker he will go down.
His circulation is pumping that drug throughout his system right now, and I shouldn't think he'll make it to the river. Let's hope not.
He's trying to the river, isn't
he? Yes, he's trying to cross over. He's gotten the wind of the other of his buddies on the other side of the river. He knows there's something wrong, and he's trying to make it, but I don't think he's going to get further than that thicket. Let's hope not.
Let's hope not.
Anyway, the question now is to follow it slowly. The bull moving tremendously quickly now, literally striding along in a half charge, its trunk raised forward before it, and the question is, will it be able to go down to the bank? It probably will. It's come to a halt 10 yards away from the edge of the bank. If it does go down, then I'm inclined to think it's going to roll down, because it does seem to be staggering slightly, still moving tremendously fast. The syringe quite clearly visible in the flank of the elephant, and down he goes, down the bank, with great lumbering strides. A cloud of white Kalahari-type sand skims up, obscures him for a moment, and now he's crossed the river, still moving in that half-trot, and we're following on foot to try to keep up with him. Incredible to see the effort that is required, and now he's hit the other side of the bank. He's crossed right across the river, and now the effort for him to move across is tremendous. The power required for him to drive his forelegs up the steep 45-degree bank on the other side of us almost proved too strong for him, but he has actually made it.
Are you going down?
Yes, sir. Can I get from the child, right?
Has he gone down, Johnny?
Yeah.
Would you mind if I trek off after them, then?
No, you're welcome.
Now moving ahead of the party, trying to keep up with Wolf, who's gone ahead with Nelson, one of the game guards, to follow up this animal. A slightly awkward position, but he is down, and the three elephants that were with him, the three bulls, are moving directly across my line of flight now as I trudge through the riverbed, moving towards the fourth member, who is now down in heavy bush. Rolf goes down on his knees. He's about 10 yards, 15 yards ahead of me. Rolf beckoning to me, trying to keep up with his 20-pound tape recorder over my shoulder is no easy business. He moved ahead of me tremendously fast. What?
There's an interesting thing. There's a big male lion here just behind our dead elephant. He's down there. You see that group of green trees down there?
Yes.
Just this side, on this side of the river.
Yes.
The lion's down there behind that dead tree that's lying down. You can't see him now. He's flattened himself. It's in a big, big male lion.
He was there beforehand, right? Lying up in the shade, I suppose.
Yes, he was there when we came over.
Yes.
We've got a bit of a problem here now that we often run into. These bulls are standing here just close by, waiting for the other elephant to join them.
Mm-hmm.
This complicates matters in that we'd like to get in and bleed the animal as soon as possible. And under normal circumstances, we'd go in and try and move them off. But we've shot our elephant for the day now. And if we moved in, there's a very good possibility that we may be charged and have to destroy another animal.
Mm-hmm.
So we just sort of wait for them to make up their mind to go away, and then we move in. And the bleeding will still be fairly reasonable. It'll be what the vets call good bleeding, even in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, I see. Well, there he is. The old bull is now lying on his side, firmly down, about 20 yards in front of him to the left of us. And I notice, Rolf, that he's still kicking. He's still spasmodically jerking his
hind legs. You always get sort of an instinctive kicking to try and right, I suppose, to try and right the animal.
Mm.
The other elephants you'll see there in the thicket.
Yes, I can just see his trunk.
That's why we're standing back here.
Mm. The wind is now carrying almost from us to them, but not quite.
Almost, yes. They still just haven't quite got the scent. If they do, they may come. We'll have to retreat here back to the riverbank because I'm not going to shoot another animal.
One of the three poor bull's partners is now moving with gentle strides towards the prostrate body of his partner, and he's actually no more than 5 yards from him, and it's going to be very interesting to see exactly what he does.
Well, often. Well, not often, but on occasions like this, when there's been no disturbance at all with the shooting, you get the other animals coming up and touching the prostrate animal, and once or twice I've seen attempts to rise the animal made by the others. They reach down with a trunk. We said go away.
The minutes ticked by, and the situation became critical. If he didn't move, the blood would begin to coagulate, and the carcass would be condemned by the veterinary officer. There was, of course, the greater danger. At any moment, he might charge.
If that elephant does charge, of course, we will be in big trouble. And we're now entering what you might call the critical period. Clem Hagner standing absolutely still. Norman Carr, a few feet from me, leaning forward slightly. Ralph Rohr on my right, watching that elephant like a hawk. He now has the .470 in his hands. He's exchanged for the drug gun. Johnny Ace slightly behind him. All of us waiting now, just waiting to see what will happen, whether that elephant will charge or whether he will turn his back on us.
But suddenly, he caught Nilsson's scent. And wheeling in a great cloud of dust, his trunk raised in a last salute, he disappeared from view.
Join us again next week for another story of the African Bushveld. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.